Support for Jazzed About Work comes from Ohio University's online master's degree in sustainability, security, and resilience. Does your organization or community have a workable plan for when a catastrophe strikes? This 18-month online degree program will give you the skills you need to prepare for, respond to, and recover from natural disasters and other crises. Participants earn 3 stackable certificates in community risk and resilience, change management and leadership, and planning resilient systems, leading to a full master's degree. Students learn cutting-edge skills in sustainability assessment and entrepreneurship, sustainable agriculture, energy policy, and more. This is an exciting, growing field, and no GRE test is required to apply. For more information, follow the link in the description on this podcast.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Jazzed About Work, where we talk about everything that might have an impact on your career. I'm your host, Bev Jones. I'm an executive coach, and I write about how your work life has a huge impact on the rest of your life, and the importance of having a job that fits with your ideal work style is a theme in today's episode. Our expert guest, Dr. Andre Martin, is an organizational psychologist who spent 20 years as the chief learning officer or chief talent officer at a bunch of big brand companies like Mars, Nike, Disney, and Google. And now Andre is a consultant, and he's written an interesting new book called Wrong Fit, Right Fit, Why How We Work Matters More Than Ever. The book is all about the need to create a good fit between how we prefer to work and the organization where we work. Andre will offer tips about how you can find the right job and how you can make some changes if your current job is not such a good fit. He'll suggest that you regularly take stock of your career, the stress it may cause you, and how it's impacting your whole life. He'll describe how managing up may help you to improve your fit. And he'll tell us about how some smart employers help their talent to find the right fit. Andre, thank you so much for being here today.
It's truly my pleasure, Beverly. Thanks for having me.
Well, today we're going to talk about your new book, which I think is really hitting a very important topic for the world of work today, and that is how do we make things better by being better matched to the place where we're working. Your new book is Wrong Fit, Right Fit, and we're going to get lots of advice from you about what right fit means. But first, here on Jazzed About Work, we're always interested in our guest's career path. So I know you're an organizational psychologist by training, and it sounds like you've worked with lots of really big brand companies, but could you tell us a little bit about how your career evolved and how you became so very interested in the importance of a good fit?
You got it, Beverly. It's a generous question. I like to start those questions out with just the origin story. So I grew up in a really small town in southern Missouri in the Ozark Mountains, and my parents were college professors, and they taught at a school that gave first-generation youth a chance to go to college and get it done for debt-free. And so early on, I learned about two things. One, as a kid, the power of education to change our lives. And I think, secondly, that you really have to understand who you're serving and what they need. And that led me to this career that's really essentially been about how do you help talent grow faster than the organization that they're working in? So how do you help them sort of be at their best, be at their most brilliant, find a place where they can do the best work of their lives? And that career took me as an organizational psychologist to the Center for Creative Leadership, which is a big executive development firm, to Disney, to Mars, Nike, Target, Google, these really big and revered brands. And one of the things that really stood out for me late in my career is in every one of those companies, there was probably 60, 70% of the people that were just so engaged, so committed, so excited to be working where they're working. And then there was always this 30-40% that when you watch them work, it really felt like they had to put in effort to be great, that it was harder for them than maybe for other people. And I just remember in watching this occur and trying to help these individuals be more engaged, that there was just something that wasn't making sense to them, something that wasn't working. It almost felt like, in the book we use this metaphor, it felt like they were writing with their non-dominant hand every single day. And I think I didn't know it then, but that sort of search for higher engagement, higher commitment when I was in these roles really led me to writing this book around, hey, maybe the problem isn't good or bad culture, toxic or engaging places to work. Maybe the issue is that many of the places we choose to go do our jobs just don't work the way we need them to for us to be at our best.
I think that's a really important question. Now, in the book, you talked about what the right fit can feel like, and it was almost poetic. It was so energetic, and you talked about how things were humming along and so forth.
Yeah.
But here's my question. You sounded so familiar with the right fit, but along the way, did you ever experience in all of those places you worked or worked with, did you experience times when, you know, it was just not right? It was the wrong fit?
I think on some level, you know, we write or talk about what we know or what we see and experience in the world. So I would say, hey, in my career, there were absolutely places where I can remember walking into work every day and just feeling comfortable in my skin, feeling like I could, and this is a quote I steal often from one of the interviewees, feeling like I could just practice my craft every single day without having to worry about the coordination cost of work. And then there were a couple places where, even though I loved being at those companies or organizations, I found that I was able to learn a great deal from being there. Every day was harder than it should have been. You know, and again, I used some of the interview quotes to talk about this. It felt like everyone had a secret decoder ring for success, except for me. I was working harder than I had in previous experiences to be as good as I was at the other places I worked. I think that inherently comes as a result of fitting in. And, you know, Beverly, one of the things I always think about in this is one of the ideas that has been sitting with me now is that we have to realize that creative energy is always flowing, right? You're never really blocked. Your creative energy is always flowing to something. When you're in a place that has right fit, it's flowing to your craft. It's flowing to the thing that you're the best in the world at. When you're in wrong fit situations, often your creative energy is flowing to managing negative emotions, to creating coping mechanisms that allow you to deal with stress, to, you know, designing stories and narratives that are protective of you and your livelihood as you're in a place that doesn't really make sense to you. And so I've just come to this realization that I think we're losing a lot of creative energy in our people, in our great talent, because they're having to spend it on trying to fit in.
I like the way you described it as creative energy. And I've been pretty fortunate in my career. I've had many careers, from university administration to law to corporate leadership, a bunch of different things. And most of the time, I was fortunate. But gosh, I know what it feels like when there was one place that I just knew immediately, these people were not my people.
Yes.
I didn't laugh at their jokes. I was offended by some of their values. I just felt like I had to use all of my energy to appear to be on the team. And it was just painful. And I knew I had to leave. I think what I realized with from that, now that I am a coach and I'm working with clients, is how much time and as you say, energy are people doing just coping. And I guess what you have noticed is a lot of just coping, just doing what it takes to get through the day.
I think that's exactly right, Beverly. And you hit something on the head that really is core to this idea of right fit versus fitting in. And there's sort of two facets to it. Does the organization that I work in appreciate, value, and see who I am, right? Those characteristics that make me, values, experiences, sort of ways of living in the world. And then does the organization work the way I like to work? Do they solve problems, set strategy, collaborate, give feedback, develop, socialize, and gather? And those are the two facets. On one hand, all these things that make us in terms of who I am. On the other hand, how we work every day. And I think what you're getting into is something that is really foundational to the book, which is to say, fit to an organization has a lot less to do with brand or product or just even the high level aspirational values that we talk about on our career websites. It has to do with how the company works on a random Thursday morning in March, right? That's where we are going to find or lose our engagement, find or lose our creative energy. So I think underlining that point that you made, which is something a lot of the interviewees talked about, is the place just felt foreign to me, right? They talked about this idea of being in a place that just didn't feel familiar. And the saddest part about it, Beverly, and tell me if you had this feeling when you were there, what our organizations often do to us in those situations is they make it about our performance. They make it about our self-worth, right? They tell us, hey, you're not succeeding because you're not good enough. And the truth is it has nothing to do with that. And so coming through the interviews, I was talking to really successful CEOs, really tremendously sort of gifted leaders. And in most cases, the conversation about wrong fit, the places and spaces where we felt like we weren't good enough, when you can look through the lens of it's just about fit, it actually was super cathartic to them. They were holding, even 20 years later, holding on to these places where they felt like they weren't good enough. And I think that's just a crime for us to do to our people. Life's hard enough.
It is. It takes a long time. I think one reason that work is so important, and we can't trivialize by saying, well, it's just a job, it's because we get our identities all tangled up with what we do, for good or for bad. And if we are dissed in the context of work, we feel bad in the whole part of our life. So it's really, mm-hmm. really important. So for individuals, so this book I thought is quite useful for leaders who want to help create an opportunity for good fit, and also for individuals. But for individuals, there are kind of two things that I think you focused on that were particularly important. One is how to ask questions and do your research if you're thinking about taking a job in the first place. And then the second thing is, what can you do if you're in a place and you know the fit isn't quite right, but there are lots of reasons you don't want to leave? So starting with the first one, do you have some basic suggestions about how people ask some questions and do some research before they accept a job?
I do, Beverly. And I think I'd probably even start well before the interview process, right? So when we came through these interviews with the 100 or so leaders I talked to, one of the questions we asked at the end was, if you could rewind the clock and sort of take that wrong fit experience and go all the way back, what would you have done differently to make sure that you landed in the right place? And most of them started with saying, I wish I would have done a little bit more introspection, a little bit more self-reflection before I ever opened my first job ad. Because what happens is once you open that job ad, you're in a giant marketing machine. Right? Yeah. Everything is geared towards getting you to take a job. And so one of the things that I find really important, and I'm a big advocate for, is if you truly are getting ready to make a transition, like turn off your computer, grab a pen, and sit with yourself and ask a few key questions, right? One is, what do you value in the world? I think the second one is, what kind of life are you trying to build 5 to 10 years from now? What's your craft or your superpower? Not what do you love or what are you passionate about, but what are you good at? What do you find meaningful in terms of your ideal leader? How do you want your company to feel day to day? How do you want it to work? And probably the most important thing is, what are you solving for right now? There's many times in a career when a job is just a job, Right. I remember I started my career off working for a steel mill up in Cleveland. And one of the insights I had, I was doing some team assessment for them, is that there were many highly gifted, amazingly high potential factory workers that could have been leaders of that company. And I was assessing them saying, you've got everything. You could totally do this. And they're like, one thing you have to fundamentally understand is that my job is a means to a different end. I come here, work really hard for 8 hours, but I want to be able to leave. I want to be able to leave my job here, and I want to be able to go enjoy the life that I'm building because of it. And I thought that was just really poignant. Is I don't know that we spend a lot of time thinking about what part does a job play in our lives, because that inherently changes over time.
It does. But I think you make an important point that we need to think about these things when we're not yet looking for a job. And right. We need to kind of keep track of them as we go through our career. Because when you're in the situation where either you need a job and you feel desperate, or somebody's recruiting you and they make you feel so good that you're tempted to accept a job that you even probably know is not the right job because it feels so good to be sought after.
Totally.
So whether it's despair or overenthusiasm you don't want to fall into, it makes sense to be asking those questions and kind of at least once a year kind of sitting down and wondering where you should be, doesn't it?
I love that idea. My wife and I, January 1st of every year, we go around the house and we replace all of our fire alarms. We replace all our light bulbs. We do all this sort of diligence to look at our house and make sure it's still in the same shape it needs to be so we can start off the year that way. I think there's a practice here for us as individuals as well to just take stock of where we are. And so whether it's the beginning of every year or even once a quarter, and you bring up the most important point around that, right, is that taking stock more often, especially in a time that's super uncertain, where the dynamics are changing, where there's a ton of stress in our lives, in our world, it just reminds us of why we're doing what we're doing. You know, and often I found in the interviews, often what people told me when they left the job were the exact reasons you said, Beverly. The first one was, it was just really nice to feel valued and seen. Like they were like, I just had this person in this company that was, you know, looking for me. They wanted me. And that just felt so good. Nothing else mattered. I think the second thing that happens is we often get attracted by the brand and the product. So when a really great organization comes calling, regardless of what it feels like to work at the company, we love the brand. So we get really motivated to make the decision. I think the third thing that sometimes happens to people, unfortunately, is that we just don't know what we're solving for. Actually, you're at a place that on most factors feels really good. It meets a lot of your needs, and you're mistaking often comfort for boredom. And so we jump because we didn't really take stock and look back and go, hey, when I take 3 steps back and open my eyes really wide, this is actually really good for my life right now.
Well, that takes us to the next question, which is how can you assure that you have the right fit, or that you still have the right fit? Because sometimes you do something and you really love it and you do get kind of bored and comfortable and you think, oh, maybe I need to do something. So what does a person do, whether it's because you're in a place that doesn't feel quite right, but you know, you really need the money and the location, or because you're just kind of in the doldrums, what can you do to help make the fit better?
Yeah, that's a great question. So once you've done that sort of deep self-awareness work and you can sort of see where the job fits and where it might not, you know, the next step is there's a piece of the book that we talked about is, hey, if you're in a hard fit, if you're sort of feeling too comfortable, if you're not sure it's the right place, what can you do to just make it a little bit better? And I think that's the important piece of this is, you know, it's not good or bad. It's not binary. There's just so many levels to right or wrong fit that if you can feel momentum, make a little bit of progress, it can really help you. So in the book, we put a couple chapters on what I call buffers. There's these things you can sort of actively do and control that will allow you to make a little bit better relationship with your organization or your job. And there's two types. There's relational buffers, and then there's sort of inspirational buffers. And so when you think about the inspirational side, one of the things I tell people all the time is one of the things that gets in our way is all we see is the bad. All we see is the tasks and the work we have to get done. We sort of forget the why behind it all. Mm-hmm. And so I tell people is every day at the start of your day, make a connection to the purpose or the cause of the organization that you're working in, right? So be able to answer the question of why is the world better with this company in it? Because it will start to add value to your day. You know, then when you look at a task, it's sort of the same story they used to tell about the janitor that worked at NASA, you know, who said, hey, I don't sweep floors. You know, I'm putting a man on the moon. It's that sort of mentality that helps you create a little bit more purpose behind why you do what you do. I think the second one is I tell people every day, I'm like, life's the greatest classroom on earth. Right? Literally, you don't need a development program. You don't need to go to a leadership seminar. Life is the greatest classroom on earth. What we need to be able to do is realize that every day is an opportunity to learn and grow, reflect, and get better. And one of my early bosses, when I was at a first maybe wrong fit experience, he told me, if you can be a success at a company that doesn't work for you, then you're inherently going to be a success the rest of your life. And so one of the ways to frame it as a laboratory for how can you make this work and feel okay and minimize stress and increase your effectiveness? Because if you can do it there, when you end up being in a right fit experience, you have all these other tools to go from. I think the last one is, and this one's always funny when I talk to people about it, is often we know that our engagement is linked to our manager. And if you don't have a good manager, you don't have great engagement. It's one of the foundationals of the work that Gallup does. I always tell people, I'm like, yeah, but the thing that no one tells you is that you actually make your manager, right? You have the ability to shape and change their behavior and create the kind of leader that you need. And so those are some of the inspirational buffers. I think the relational buffers, one of my favorites that came up, and I think you'll appreciate this, is find your workplace doppelganger, right? So a doppelganger we know is someone in the world out there that looks exactly like you work.
Yeah.
Or sorry, looks exactly how you look. At work, it's someone who has the same experiences, the same skills, they might even do a similar job to you, and they're different from you in one category, is that this place feels easy for them to work in. They have right fit and you don't. And the reason the doppelganger is really important to find is it gives you a barometer for whether or not in some way, in some manner, this organization you're working at today could be a really good right fit for you. And it gives you a way to sort of look at what is that person doing? How are they sort of evolving this organization? And what could I take from that to make my day a little bit better? But sometimes we just need a barometer. You know, someone who's out there that we see, we value, looks, acts, has the same experience as us, and they're succeeding because it gives us hope.
I like that. Finding a model, an example that's going well can be a great way to get out of your own head. One reason everything might be feeling so bad is because you're telling yourself, I hate this place. This isn't for me. And you're responding to your own inner voice. So if you see somebody who has a different voice, that can be really great. I want to go back, though, to two of the things you just mentioned to kind of emphasize them, because they're two of my favorite topics. Mm. One is you mentioned learning. Mm-hmm. And I kind of think that that's one of the most important secrets of being engaged at work. And that is finding a learning path, no matter where you are, whether it's good or bad, whatever is happening. If you're learning, you're always giving yourself a chance to enjoy the process, because learning is inherently a positive thing, but you're also preparing for the unknown future. So that makes so much sense, right, is to always have a learning path. But the other thing that you mentioned, which I think is brilliant, because most people don't focus on it, is focusing on managing up. In your book, mm-hmm. you talk about how you can manage up, including with positive reinforcement. And I think very often the boss is somebody who is an A student. That's why they got up to be at the top. And now nobody's giving them A's, and they're in deprivation of positive reinforcement. So it's such a powerful tool, isn't it?
Beverly, it's like the most powerful tool I think there is in business, right? Because there's a couple truths as you move up an organization, become a manager, and then a leader of people, is two things happen. One is you're inherently doing a job that you're not fully prepared for. And so that puts you in a really big state of stress, right? Everybody, you know, as much as we do learning, yeah, we're never really prepared for these big jobs once we get them. And I think secondly is that you get less and less feedback the further up you go, because everybody inherently wants something from you. So they're telling you convenient versions of the truth. And so one of the things I tell everybody, and I hope, you know, whoever's listening uses this tool, is because there's a dearth of feedback for every manager or leader, they are looking for someone to tell them they are doing an okay job.
Exactly.
The best thing you can do, right? The best thing you can do is sit down and make a list of the top 10 behaviors that your best leaders in your career ever showed for you, the things that made you so motivated to come to work, and then carry that list with you. And anytime you see your manager or leader do one of those things, give them the feedback. And don't say, hey, boss, you did a great job. Say, hey, boss, I really love that you kicked off this meeting with an inspirational story about a customer that we helped. It really helped me to be motivated to work even harder tomorrow.
That's an important point.
Yeah.
I think what you're saying is you have to make it very specific, because if you're just saying, oh, you're so great, it just sounds like, you know, you're sucking up. It's awful. But totally. If you are very specific and you say, this is exactly what you did and this is exactly what it meant to me, it's like magic.
It's magic, because you know what they're going to do? The next time they open a meeting, they're going to do that same thing again.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Because yeah, someone told them that this is what great looks like in the eyes of the people that are leading. And I've never had a manager that once they got that really specific feedback, they didn't do that again and again and again. It's like, you just really do make your leader. And there's such an opportunity for us to create the environment we want by using those basic factors of positive reinforcement. So I hope whoever's out there starts to realize they can make their manager.
Yeah, that's a really great point. Well, oh gosh, this is fun and we're running out of time, but I do have another question I want to ask you.
Yeah.
And that is, I don't know, as we all know, it's a tumultuous time in terms of the world of work, particularly with hybrid and mm-hmm. So many different questions on what is the right way to work. It feels like, however, a lot of smart organizations, including some really big, wealthy companies, are working hard to try to help their employees be more engaged and find a better fit. Do you see any companies out there, as you're consulting and talking with lots of smart people, you see some places that are really smart is how they are helping their team members get a better fit?
Yeah, I do. I think there's a couple of just high level sort of lessons I'm seeing in the companies that are doing a really good job in this, you know, time when we're really redefining what work means in the world. I think the first thing is that they do is they know who they are. Right? They can answer four questions really eloquently. Why is the world better with us in it? How do we make money? How do we do work? And what's our unwavering promise to you? Right? They fundamentally know those answers. Yeah. And those answers are based in truth, not aspiration or, you know, culture decks and marketing. They're really based in, this is what we fundamentally believe is true. And the thing is, Beverly, is they don't waver from it. You know, they don't try to appease everybody and be a place where everyone can come and be great, because it's just not true. You know, I can tell you, working at the companies I've worked in, a person who's highly successful at Nike wouldn't probably do that well at Target, wouldn't probably do that well at Mars, wouldn't probably do that well at Disney, because those companies inherently work differently. And so the best right now know who they are, and they're not apologizing for it. I think the second thing is they're designing the assets that they're providing for their employees based on the answers to two basic questions. One, how can we authentically provide flexibility in a way that fits the way that we work? They're not just saying it's, you know, 2 days in the office, 3 days in the office. It's not even about how many days in the office. It's we're able to give you flexibility, flexibility in how you see your job and how you come and go and how you think about your benefits and perks, all those things. And I think the second thing they do really well is they're making the work that we do really meaningful. Another way to put that is they're stopping this practice of making people the narrowed version of their job. You know, I watch people come into companies and you just become your job. Like that's all you are. You know, you become a data analyst. And it's like, no, this person was a concert pianist. They were a graphic designer. They were a journalist. Like there's all these skills that we inherently don't use. And so the best are saying, hey, let me see what you have to offer. And let me get you work that allows you to play in as many of those crafts as I can, because that's going to allow you to feel fulfilled, which is sort of the question more than engagement we need to answer is engagement's an outcome. What you need to build for is fulfillment. And if I can feel fulfilled in these hours that I spend at work, I'm likely going to stay.
Yeah. And I think that's important around the questions of diversity. And there's so many kinds of diversity that mm-hmm. we're aware of these days. If you can see where people are and focus in on what makes them special, what makes them different, figure out how that can be helpful, how you can create a fit between what we need and what this person inherently has, then everybody benefits, right? I mean, that's a great way to approach diversity. I think your explanation would move us toward less stress about the question of diversity and inclusion.
I think that's right. I hope so, right? There is a lot of disenfranchised groups in the world that have been asked to fit in on a number of facets their entire lives. And, you know, part of what I want to do with the book is to say, hey, I can't talk about all those facets, but what the book can do is say, one of them is how we work. And there's diversity in how we work. There's diversity in, you know, our ethnicity. There's diversity in our religion. There's diversity in all of our preferences. But how we work is one of the places that we just don't believe we pay enough attention to. And so my hope is that we can really look at both as individuals, how do I prefer to get work done? You know, in what environment am I at my best? And then as companies start saying, hey, is our brand of crazy your brand of crazy? You know, and being really authentic and honest about how we get work done, because if that makes sense to you, you know, then there's a good chance you can come here, practice your craft and have a lot more opportunity because you're not wasting creative energy on trying to figure out how a place works or trying to figure out how to be successful, which is where I see us wasting a lot of our time.
Well, Andre, I think that your book is going to help people and inspire people who are kind of grappling with these issues. Let me repeat the entire title again. It's Wrong Fit, Right Fit, Why How We Work Matters More Than Ever. And it does tell us why it matters, and it helps us figure out what to do about it. So thank you for sharing some of the tips with us. I think it's going to be a really helpful book for lots of people, and I hope this conversation has been helpful too.
It's been great. I mean, it's been just a fantastic interview. I could have spent another hour talking to you, Beverly, so thanks for creating the space.
Well, it was a pleasure for me. I hope you have a great day.
Same to you.
Today we've been talking with organizational psychologist Andre Martin about the importance of finding a good fit at work. This podcast is produced by WOUB Public Media. Adam Rich is our audio engineer. I'm your host, Beverly Jones, author of Find Your Happy at Work. And our sponsor is the Voinovich School of Leadership and Public Service at Ohio University. Today's tip is that if your job doesn't feel like a good fit, there are a lot of things you can do to make it better, like focusing on your mission, learning something new, or getting better at managing your boss. Thanks for listening to Jazzed About Work. Please spread the word about us and come back soon.